This week's episode is brought to you by Patrick & Company Wholesale Showroom Agency, located in the Dallas Market Center. For over 30 years, Patrick & Co. has been the go-to source for retailers, helping to discover those unique, sought-after, and stylish brands. Hey there, I'm Michelle Charrier, and this is the Retail Whore Podcast, the stories and lessons from a life in retail. Hello, hello. Oh my gosh, guys. Okay, so show season is coming up. I feel like we just closed the season out, but it is coming up again. And I love my conversations with manufacturers and vendors just as much as I love my conversations with retailers. I think you guys knowing where the story comes from and how they started, I think it's so incredibly important to the industry that these stories are told. Today's episode is no different. I'm lucky enough to have the beautiful Nora Fleming with us. I did a live in Dallas. We did a live podcast event and I was able to interview her. Unfortunately, the sound from the koi pond where we were sitting, the sound quality was not great. And quite honestly, it was a half an hour. I had to keep my times down. And you know, I'm rarely having a podcast that's under an hour, but I had to keep my time down because it was live. So I asked Nora to come back and interview and do the interview for here for us for the podcast. So if you did not catch any of the few bits of live that we had broadcasted out, this is your chance to get to know Nora. She's one of those people that I am not going to lie, I completely fangirled out on her, but she's just lovely. She has this beautiful heart and the story of the brand and where they are now and where they came from and how everything was built and how she gives back is so incredible. And I was a fangirl of her before and I truly am even more now. So I can't wait for you guys to hear this. So without further ado, here is my interview with Nora Fleming of Nora Fleming. Nora, welcome to the Retail Whore Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I was lucky enough to have a chance to meet you and interview you in person. We're in Dallas. And I had said to somebody you are one of those people that there is this light and this energy and this just compassion and like walking away talking to, I'm fangirling out right now on you, but walking away from our interview was just there's something about you that I just have to say, I just absolutely adore you. And I'm so honored to have you here and for like our listeners to hear from you and about the brand, but really to hear about you because you are such a beautiful human.
Oh, thank you though. Thank you.
You're welcome. I want you to introduce yourself and tell a little bit about yourself and a little background on you. And then we're going to dig in.
Sure. So my name is Nora. And I started Nora Fleming about 20 years ago now. We're just celebrating our 20th year anniversary. And it all started with a little paint your own pottery shop I opened when I graduated from college. I studied political science and women's studies, but I had met my husband. I knew I wanted to have a family relatively early. So I wanted to find some sort of career that I could do while being home with the kids or having the kids with me at work. So I opened this little paint your own pottery shop in Naperville, Illinois. And as the years went by, I started just becoming more artistic. I was also freelance copywriting for a advertising agency at the time, which really catapulted me into believing in myself as an artist. Like even just going to meetings, I never had identified as an artist. Mm. So going to creative meetings, you know, I would come with my little sketchbook and have ideas and people like, you're more than just a creative writer. Like you've got some ideas here. So I really credit a lot of like my confidence and able to do what I did with working at that job at the time, you know, just part-time project-based. So I started drilling holes in plates and sculpting little figures when things were quiet at the shop and just making my own art, zenning out. And then I just started selling them in the traditional craft fairs around the neighborhood, you know, any church basement, holiday fair I was at with my little folding table. My kids still laugh that like they remember I would be at work when the kitchen table was gone because I would take it with me to set my wares up on to sell. So that's how it started. I did end up having both of my children early. My son Henry was born in 2002 and my daughter Lila was born in 2004. My daughter's birth was very tumultuous and scary, and it was just a very scary birthing experience. And she has some sort of syndrome, but there's no name for it. And she's done like genetic testing and stuff. And she's doing fantastic, but she has a lot. She's had a lot of surgeries and stuff in her life. Cognitively, developmentally, she's fine. She's off in Switzerland at school, but you know, in the past 24 months, she's had both her feet reconstructed.
Wow. And it's still going on.
It's still going on. Yeah. But the reason why I say this is when I had her is when the business was really starting to take off. Like people, not on a wholesale scale, but just, you know, I would get a phone call a day from somebody saying, hey, can you make my mom's friend's sister one of these plates? Because she saw mine and wanted it. And as you can imagine, you know, for all the moms out there listening, I really was not interested in doing that because I was focused on my kid and finding the best doctors and finding the best support for her. So at that point, again, that was 2004, my brother came to me. He had just graduated from college and was working doing cold calls for some big corporation. And he came to me and said, you know, people really love your art. I know you're not in a super appropriate phase to start a business, but I'd really like to see if we can turn this into something, you know, on a more mass scale, which I was so honored. Like, I couldn't even believe it that he wanted to do that. He and I had always been best friends, but never thought we'd be business partners. So it was awesome. And at that point, another friend of ours, father, was in the furniture business, and he was selling porcelain finials for bedposts. So he invited my brother on a buying trip to China, and my little brother, 24 years old, got on a plane and flew over there with my girlfriend's father to that factory, who is still our factory today, which is amazing. Such a cool story. But yeah, they figured out. So originally, the ones I was making had just a glued ceramic stem. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with the product. Those of you who aren't, there's plates and there are these minis. The minis have silicone stems that pressure fit into the hole. They're tapered so that they don't clank around. But my original ones were just ceramic on ceramic. So they just, you know, wobbled around in there. So he developed that silicone stem when he was over there on that trip and figured out how to produce them and how we were going to do it and that it was possible. But we had to order 144 of each. And we were like, wow, we're never going to sell.
How many files did you have at that point?
12. We started with 12 minis and 4 base pieces.
12. And we had 44 is how many?
Exactly. And we had to order. We had to order that. And we're like, it's going to take us 8,000 years to sell these. There's no way, you know, we're going to be able to do this. Not to mention the fact that neither one of us had any money.
I was going to say the cost alone. I can't even imagine what that.
Yeah, no. We had no warehouse. We had nothing. So we went to the banks with our, you know, business plan and our samples, maybe 3 or 4 different banks, and they all said no. We needed about $30,000. And they all denied us, but we kept plugging along. And finally, we convinced my grandmother, who was a school teacher in Southwest Michigan and had like her very first dollar, like very, very frugal woman. She cashed in some CDs and loaned us the money. So that's how it started. And we placed our first PO and it came to my parents' garage. And rest, they say, is history. We were able to pay off my grandma before she passed away. So that was really fun to see that come full circle.
And going back to your store, so you decide you're going to open, like, they're like for California, Color Me Mine was the big one.
Yes, exactly the same concept. Yes.
So had you ever had a business before like that? Like, forget like I'm going to open a ceramic store, but like I'm going to open a business just in general. Like was it franchised or was it?
I did not do a franchise.
You didn't even get the franchise information.
No.
You literally did it like just
off on the ground.
Mm-hmm. How did you know that?
It was a very successful little business.
I mean, they were everywhere.
Yes. And it was a blast. I met amazing people. And, you know, again, it was just a place where I was able to be creative that I didn't know. Like I went in it as a business, not as a creative. which looking back now, I can see I was creative my whole life. But, you know, I don't know, our generation, that wasn't something you thought of as a career path, you know, as much as people do now. So,
yes. So you, I remember when we talked in Dallas, you had said how this idea came to you is that all these women were coming in and painting all these different platters for every holiday. And it's like, where do you put them all? And just the brilliance of understanding, okay, like a basic platter, drill a hole in it, and then you interchange these little pieces. Like just the fact that you came up with that off the top, like how did that come up to you? Cause that's where to me, the real brilliance is like, holy shit. Like who thinks about that? Like that's amazing.
Well, and I remember too being floored that it didn't exist, you know, and there was not nearly as much, you know, internet access back in 2000. But I mean, I remember like Google, like there have to be interchangeable plates. Like I cannot be the first person to think of this, that who wants a Christmas plate and a Halloween plate and an Easter plate and a birthday plate and a, you know, that's, it has to be out there. And it wasn't. And so I just, I don't know. I harnessed the energy of these women and how excited they were about celebrating every occasion, but just tried to streamline it and simplify it for people to make it way easier to stack and store. And then I had no intention of the collectability of it all. Like that part, I mean, collectibles are over in the 2000s. You don't know it's collecting anything anymore.
Yeah.
So the fact that, you know, that there was a resurgence of that, has been really amazing to see too, but really, really cool. It's been obviously 20 years now. I'm seeing grandmas come in with daughters and grandchildren, and they've all, you know, they all have collections now. It's just, it's very, very cool to see how it's grown in families.
It's funny because I did not know about your product until one of my accounts, Local Fair. She's in Orange County.
Yeah.
And yeah, she had actually told me, I think you did a signing at Sur La Table in Laguna or something. And she was like, Michelle, there were so many people. And when, you know, getting to know your product and like the interchangeability of it and like, you know, merchandising it. And then, you know, her telling me more and more about you. And then when I had the opportunity, I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited to be able to do it. Cause she said it was, Michelle, it was crazy. The line of people to meet Nora at the Sur La Table event was, she goes, and she's so, is everything I said earlier is like, you were so lovely and engaging to people. And it wasn't, cause she, I think a lot of owners of companies or brands will do appearances and it's all good for the first hour or something like that. And the longer it gets, the poor people who have been waiting in line, it's less and less excitable, the person that you're there to see, and it becomes more fast and like sign something. But she said, honestly, like from the first guest to the last people, she was that engaging, that, you know, chatting everyone and what pieces were they collecting and what was it for? And I loved that. I think spoke a lot about you as a person.
Well, that is by far like the honor of my life, is that I get to do this. And I'll give you a little background. So my brother really kind of promoted the signings to start with. He's like, you know, I think you should get out there and tell your story and maybe you can help other entrepreneurs. And so, I mean, I'm much more of an introvert than an extrovert. But I did it, and I would like literally sit in the car before every signing and be like, this is insane. Like, why are these people here? Why, I, you know, this is like beyond my wildest dreams, and I'm not cool enough to wait in line for sure. But fast forward, I lost my brother in a car accident 4 years ago now. And that has changed my whole perspective on signings. People are not there to meet me. People are there to share their story of what this product means to them. Every single signing, there's at least two or three people who are crying, you know, because it's so meaningful, their story of how either a mini came to them or their whole collection from their mother came to them and how she cherished each piece and who gifted each piece to them. And I mean, the stories are just, it's completely mind boggling. Like it sounds like it should be so benign, like just coming in to get your plates on it. It's not. It's like lifelong friends are made. People are holding each other. People are telling their stories. People are honoring their family traditions, the people they lost in their families. It's been truly the honor of my life to hear what a plate with a hole in it has meant to people. Like, it's unbelievable.
Well, you've created a modern keepsake. I mean, it's my mom, you know, collected she collected antiques, and you know, in within that there were different plates or whatnot. But I do know the one thing that she did give me. She, instead of being a, like, instead of being like, here each year I'm going to give you a piece to the collection, she gave me like the whole collection at once. It was like, okay, here you go. But the the Spode group, and
yes.
You know, for me, it's like, I don't have kids. So it's like, I often wonder, who do I pass these to? And, but you really have created a modern keepsake that, that does go from one generation to the next generation. And the fact that you created this on your own, that's the part that's so mind blowing, is that, you know, how important this, it's not just, I mean, it's an amazing gift, and the stores that sell it sell phenomenally. I mean, it's literally a cult classic, but in what you're saying is like how much deeper it goes as far as like the giftability, the not giftability, but the keepsake value of it, and how it is passed down from one person to another, and why the pieces are given to others. Like, did you ever, like, I'm sure that was never even like thought of, like it was going to end up being this modern keepsake gift.
No, I don't have a single retired piece. I mean, if somebody was going to pay me $10 for a mini, I was selling it, you know, like I had no idea what it would become. And the community that it's created, I mean, that's what I'm most proud of, for sure. Like, I don't know if you've had a chance, or any of the listeners have had a chance to join some of the like private Facebook Nora Fleming groups. There's one called Celebrations and one called Original Nora Fleming Friends. And they're very active Facebook groups. And their whole mission is to spread kindness. So literally, these people are exchanging minis anonymously. You know, somebody knows that somebody broke something, and it'll show up at their door.
Yeah.
You know, no sign, you know who it's from, nothing. Just random acts of kindness, like every day. So it's created way more of a community than I ever could have imagined. And that's definitely what I'm most proud of, and what I want to harness moving forward. Like, that element of what the business has brought to the world, I think it's what we're craving as humans, you know, just more community and feeling like you belong and that you're heard. Matt, I hear amazing stories. I had a woman at a signing this fall who was in a domestic violent abusive relationship. And she came to the signing because she was restarting her collection because he had destroyed it in one of his fits. And I was able to get her address and send her like a new starter kit of stuff.
Wow.
But, you know, as soon as the person behind her heard it, like, she was gifting her a mini. Like, people are just heard and taken care of and feel important in this group. And it's such an honor to be part of it.
You had touched on your brother passing, and when we recorded live, you said this was the first, last Thanksgiving was the first one where you felt real joy again. With having your brother being, both of you being at the helm of the company, other than the obvious change, like, how did you navigate the business now without your partner? How different does it look now from when?
Very different. Very different. I will tell you, like, the first couple months, it was very doubtful that I would continue. Like, I couldn't even go into the office. I mean, everything was so tied to him. We had our basically a secret language. I don't know. Oh, that's happening. Well, all of your listeners know about the gift industry. I mean, we were like carnies. Like, we grew up in this industry together, and I felt like I was missing my right arm. And it's actually one of the things I'm most proud of in my life. I remember the day he died. Finding out he died, I was at his home. You know, people were coming over in droves, and it was a beautiful November day, and I was standing outside his front door, and I had like this epiphany that I was going to make it through this, or in honor of him, in honor of his wife, his children, and my children. And I wasn't just going to do it to do it, but I was going to do it and make it something even more beautiful than I ever could have imagined. Like, it was like a truth bomb hit me that day. It was like, you can do this, Nora. Now, there were many bad days between there and now, but that very first day, I remember vividly. I don't know if it was spirit, if it was divine intervention, but it was like, you're going to do this, and you're going to make beauty out of this really, really shitty situation.
Do you feel like sometimes, because I know, like, I'm woo-woo, I'm the first to admit it, I'm sure you still feel his presence.
Every day. And our team is just amazing. Like, I mean, I was Well, I mean, it goes back to even how it started. Like, fundamentally, I wasn't in a great place mentally, you know, worried about my daughter. And he kind of took it to that next step that I wasn't able to do at that time. And then when I lost him, I had to rely on my employees and coworkers to really hold it together when I couldn't. So it's been a lot of humbling. You really realize that it really does take a village. Anything that's successful, anything that's worth doing, you're not going to do it on your own. And yeah. In my opinion, like, you have to be able to fall apart and lean on people and then hold other people up when it's your turn, you know? And that's really what we've done within our Nora Fleming family itself. We just had a core values meeting yesterday. And I mean, I just couldn't stop crying. Like, the core values that we have as a company were just so in line with my greatest dreams. You know, it was loyalty. It was family first. It was community. It was people were writing, you know, even if I'm in the warehouse, I know I can come to the art department with a mini idea. Like, it was just such a community, I got, like, within our company. So that's just, it looks different for sure. It looks different for sure. It's much more female. You know, he was a very man's man, you know, and took the business side of it, where, again, I'm much more woo-woo and I go a lot on intuition and I go a lot on, I don't really love to look at, like, P&L stuff. You know what I mean? Like that.
Amen to that, sister.
Yeah, and we're coming up with new ideas. Like, I'm thrilled. It's not my intention to, like, take over the gift industry, where I think it would have been maybe a little more, what's the word? Like, corporate. I think it would have been a little more corporate had he not passed away.
Who has, I'm sure it's not one person that's taken his place. Like, how has the workload been divvied up, and are they very much your brother's core values, and have they kind of carried on the torch, so to speak?
Yes and no. Like I said, it's much more intuitive. We run the business much more intuitively than we would have if he was here. We do not make decisions based on bottom line. You know, it's Janice and I. Janice is the president of the company now, and she's kind of the yin to my yang, but, you know, she says all the time, like, what we say no to is equally as important as what we say yes to. It's, you know, it's not about getting the product out there everywhere. It's about finding the right stores with the right customers, with the right intention. You know, it's more of a long game to us than it is a profitability game, if that makes sense.
I love that, because I think there are a whole lot of companies where it's really about the numbers, and it's really, and I, you know, I'm not even going to mention any companies, but a lot of it became very clear during the pandemic. And, you know, like talking to Alec just now and what his company does with their employees and how, you know, they honor them and how their give back programs. And I think companies like that give back, and that the employees and the philosophy of the brand is more important than the bottom line. And that's not to say that's not Alex's thing, but for sure, I think that's so important, because it's the heart that runs the business. And that, I think, is going to in turn make you successful. And I don't think it's a lot of companies' way of doing things. And I think that's why the brand does so well, because it is run from the heart.
I would 100% agree.
And your team, I love the team you travel with. I absolutely, it's all female, and you all know each other so well. And you are truly the yin to the yang, so especially watching you and Janice interact, and yeah. Who I just absolutely adore. I mean, I adore your entire team. Like, I've gotten to know them, and I can imagine going to work every day with this very strong team of women. And what you guys are able to produce, because it's, you know, I'm all about the all female teams. How much of the company is female, by the way?
99. The warehouse staff is half and half, but most of the marketing and executive team is women. All of them are, actually.
And who went to high school with you?
Nobody.
Somebody was saying when I was in Vegas, she was like, Nora was always the
cool. Kate.
Yeah. She's like, Nora was always the cool girl in high school.
Kate was my brother's class. So she was 2 years younger than I am, two classes below me. But she started her own consulting business, doing sales consulting. So she's teaming up with us on that right now. So yeah, it is comfortable for sure.
I love her. She's actually the one that told me about the Divine Feminine book. That I'm in the process of reading right now.
Hi, guys. I hope you're enjoying this episode. Now for a message from today's sponsor. This week's episode is brought to you by Patrick & Company Wholesale Showroom Agency, located in the Dallas Market Center. For over 30 years, Patrick & Co. has been the go-to source for retailers, helping them discover unique, sought-after, and stylish brands. From captivating home decor to unforgettable gift items, fashion-forward accessories, and lifestyle brands, they are known to provide personalized service to retailers in their local markets. To find out more, please visit them on Instagram at Patrick & Co. Showroom or online at patrickandcompany.com. Now, back to our episode.
I have to ask you, because I, you know, in production, I'm always kind of blown away about how, you know, when the decision comes on, when you, not only just the little minis that you're creating, but you have an extensive group of platters and like tabletop accessories that all these interchangeable pieces go to. How many pieces did you start with in the original collection, and what were they?
12. It was the original 12 that we still have, the core collection. 12 minis and then 4 base pieces. And now we're probably up to, I don't know, there's probably 350, 400 minis that have been made and retired. We used to just introduce them twice a year at the major markets in July and January. But we've kind of shifted from that because we've really tried to listen to our independent retailers. And we've shifted to a quarterly release now, 2 minis each quarter, just to kind of keep that touch point and excitement with the store, giving the stores the ability to reach out to their customers more than just twice a year. So that's been very, very, very well received.
How many platters and how many accessory tabletop pieces do you have now, along with the hundreds of minis?
Yeah, there's probably 20 at any given time, 20 different base pieces.
When you went to manufacture those, like, how hard was that? Because, you know, the creation of the minis is one thing, but then the whole platter and what it's going to go on is a whole other ball of wax when it comes to production. Like, how did you manage that part of it?
I mean, we really just started with like the basics, like the best selling base pieces that would be in anyone's, you know, kitchen cabinet. And then it's just been a lot of listening to what people want. You know, it's people wanted more pieces that they could leave out all the time. So we did, you know, the paper towel holder, we did a salt and pepper shaker, we did a vase, we did a candle holder. And that was just really based on people saying, I have nowhere to put my mini unless I have my plate out, you know, and I want to have it out all the time. Memo board, we just relaunched the memo board in honor of our 20-year anniversary, and people just love that one, just to write little messages to their kids or their spouse or their coworkers, and then change out their minis. So yeah, it's been a lot of just listening to what people want. And then, you know, we really stayed true to like our philanthropic roots. I inevitably, every show season, somebody asks me why I don't make colored plates. So you would love to have colored plates. Well, I don't have enough warehouse space to have colored plates. I'm not in the colored plate business. But that's how we ended up developing this scallop silicone rims in colors that fit around the rim of the base pieces. And it also has a hole in it, because people wanted something for their college colors or their high school colors. And how simple is that, right? They can put it on, take it off. And we were able to correlate each of the 9 colors with a different local organization that we give a portion back to. So people are buying for a purpose, and it makes sense, and you can have your color and you can take it off. So yeah, it's
the silicone ring, because I saw that at the show and I meant to ask you about that. Like, how did you come up with that? Because that's like, that's brilliant. I mean, without having the interchange
every show, will you please make colored plates? At least like, you know, the basic primary colors. No, I can't make those, because where am I going to put them? Like, I don't have a warehouse big enough for all of that. So I literally just brainstormed with the team. I was like, let's just make an interchangeable rim. So the original, we should see our offices are hysterical. There's like cut paper and, you know, like how things look in the beginning to how they look in the end is so fun to watch it evolve. But yeah, we had colored paper and we were doing scalloped edges, or do we do a straight edge, and how do we get it to fit on there, and how do we line the holes up, and then what do we do? Because, you know, the silicone is obviously pliable, but it only works on one piece. So we had to like really structure our production to have accommodate new pieces that those silicone rems would fit on. You know, if people are going to invest in these colors, they're going to want to use them on a few different pieces. So that kind of, you know, then give a little nod to some of the newer pieces that are coming out that work with the silicone rim.
I mean, it's so on the forefront. It's shit that people aren't doing. And that's, I think, what blows my mind about how this just like comes out of Nora's head of like, let's do this. Like it's so on the forefront. Like it's something that nobody is doing. And like you come up with it. That's the part, I think, to me as a designer, but that it just, how people just make something up and all of a sudden it's like, ta-da.
Well, and I'm sure, again, as most of your listeners know, like there isn't a lot of innovation in the gift industry
anymore.
And it's actually kind of sad because there's a lot of like, I don't want to say stealing, but you know, it's just redoing the same thing over and over again. And I think that's what's set us apart as well, is that people want something innovative and something that's different. Store owners, you know, they want to carry something. They want to offer their customers something that they can't find everywhere.
Yeah.
That's what we really, really try and hold true to, not just reinventing the wheel, but making our own method of transportation, if you will.
But I like also that you're smart about it as far as like colored place. Like, no, it's like, and I like it too, because it's like everything is white. So it's like the basic white. What pops are the minis. And now that you've added this, I mean, without like, yes, let's add this. Because I think honestly, like as a buyer, sometimes when there's too much, it's overwhelming as the buyer. It's like, and then, you know, you roll that into a store and then now your customers are confused. And it's, you know, what's great about the minis, they're affordable. You can change them in and out. The owner doesn't have to carry up. Now I need the red plates. Now I need the yellow plates. Now it's like basic whites. And all the interchangeable color is these little minis that are affordable that anyone can afford and give multiple pieces. And, you know, the retailer can have multiple styles and not have to be break the bank for, you know, as far as inventory.
Right. And that was another, you just sparked a thought that I had, two thoughts. One is for anybody out there who's listening, who might want to start doing something of their own, not to be afraid, like, and it takes time. Like even the bands that, you know, original, when we first launched them, they were not that popular. And now it's more pieces, they fit more pieces and people understand them more. No one understood what we were making originally. I mean, people would be like, is this a bottle stopper? You know, and then they'd keep walking. And I mean, it takes a long time for buyers to trust enough in a product to buy it, you know, and that's okay. I think a lot of people get super discouraged off the bat if they're not like, you know, blown in out of the water the first couple of years.
Patience.
But it can be a brilliant idea and it takes a long time. Still is going to take a long time. So just be patient with yourself.
I don't think a lot of people have patience. I hate to say it. Like, I know for sure I'm like the worst. Like we're right. Side note is we're in Oregon and we're looking at this one house and it's in the neighborhood I want. And like, it's a Craftsman, but it is the most insane amount of paint and color, multiple paint choices that are like horrible. Like in one room, this wall is lime green and you can see them all from standing in one place.
Yeah.
The kitchen is lime green. Then it goes into this weird, like moss green and then lacquer purple. And then this other darker purple with this funky swirl. And it's like, I'm like, I want this house so bad, but I'm also looking at like, this all has to get painted. I mean, keep the moss green wall, but the rest of it, good God, white's so clean. And I have to sit there with myself and talking about patience. It's like, I have to, if I'm moving in there, I know myself and I know I'm not patient and I know I'm not allowed to paint it because I'm not patient. And then I rush through things and I fuck things up. But I'm literally, patience is very challenging for a lot of people and especially myself. So it's, you know, when it comes to building a brand or building product, it's like, it's very hard to stay patient and not only patient, but to stay true to it and not give up on it and not start wanting to make changes and like, no, it's not working. I'm going to change it. Cause I think everybody from retail to floor setting to production to whatever if it's not taking off right away, whether that's a couple months or a year, instantly we all want to change it and we all were like, no, forget it, like quit it, like, you know, not just take a breather, be patient, watch it. And, you know, that's, I think, the hardest thing for any entrepreneur or person with paint, myself.
Yes, totally. Totally.
I had a question when we were there, and I don't know if I asked or not, is when you retire them, how long are they out for before you decide you're going to retire them?
That totally depends. Usually when we retire something, it's because we're bringing something in to replace it. So a different, you know, Fiesta one or different Christmas one. So we'll retire a Christmas to bring in Christmas. That's been crazy too, is watching this like secondary market that's happened. There's two things that happen. One is the reselling of the minis. Once they're retired, it's insane. And I mean, insane. Thousands of dollars people are paying for retired minis. And then working my minis and repurposing them, which people think I get upset about, but I don't. I actually love it. And I love that I'm providing a vehicle for people to create something. You know, like they'll take the, I don't know what, all sorts of different things. Clothes. They're making clothes for minis. They're making, you know, minis and, yeah. They'll take the beer can and turn it into something else. Like it's very, very fun to see what people have come up with and how they've kind of made it their own and put their own twist on it. So that's been a very cool secondary thing to watch happen over the years too.
Well, the resale thing, it's like that Ray Dunn phase that everyone went through, like, good Lord. Like, I mean, people were showing, I had That's So Andrew, who has a card line, and he was like, he had a whole business where he'd show up at Home Goods, like the day they, I mean, which a lot of people did, show up the day that they arrive at the store, buy it all, and then resell it on eBay. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
A lot of work, but God damn, people make a lot of money doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Do you, like when you did your, when you'd roll out the new ones, how, like, do you ever retire some because, again, because the sell through isn't super fast and it's like, you know, it's, is there patience there of like, okay, we're going to obviously roll it out till the sell through is done, but is there patience where you want to quick draw and like, let's just retire it. It's not doing well.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's like the old adage too. As soon as it's retired, everyone wants it. Or you couldn't give, the canoe mini away. And now it's like, $5,000 for a canoe mini. Yeah, like it's just crazy. So yeah, a lot of the times when you retire because they just were kind of duds, but eventually they come back around and people want the ones because maybe only, you know, we still order in quantities of 144s, you know, so maybe we only made 288 of them. There's only 288.
The quantities are still that low.
Well, that's, we just have to do that in those increments. So that's a case.
Okay.
So yes. I mean, some of those minis, we only ordered, 1,400.
Which I will say, you know, for the retailers that are out there, that scarcity element is definitely what has to push the sales through a lot as well for the retailers. Because anytime that somebody that collects something that knows it's going to possibly retire, or they know it's going to retire at some point, or do you, okay, I'm going to back up. I'm going to cut myself up. Do you have bread and butter pieces? I call them bread and butter to my retailers. They're like the Voluspa candle that you're never going to, it's, you're always going to carry. Do you have bread and butter and then these little new interjections?
Correct.
Okay. That's
exactly.
So for the retailer that's bringing in these new interjections, you know, for them to be able to sell it on the scarcity base, it's like, if you're thinking about it and you love it, buy it now because it's going to get retired and then it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
That I think is for anything that retailers sell is important.
That we really saw that too with our Saint Shoot partnership. That was insane. So we, right before my brother passed away, he and I had a meeting because we were, just donating willy-nilly to anyone. You know, it's your kid's school thing or your mom's church bazaar, whatever. We were just giving away platters and minis and hundreds of dollars of bills. So we came together and we're like, let's see if we can join forces with an organization and like really try and make an impact. So we decided on St. Jude. My son lost his best friend, a hockey player, to a brain tumor. So we've lived that life, which sucked. We partnered with St. Jude and we signed a contract with them that over 6 years, we would make 9 minis and all of the proceeds would go to St. Jude.
Wow.
And they sold out like immediately. Like it was crazy. And we had a contract, so we would only make a certain amount. We ended up upping that amount because it was like people would buy them and then we're not donating them money because we're out, and there's still need for want for them. But that's something like our little company of 20 people when it's all said and done, we're on our last mini. Our last St. Jude mini is getting released March 4th. So next week. But after that one sells.
6-year contract?
Yeah. After that one sells out, we'll write our final check and the whole donation will be $1.3 million.
That is incredible. Oh my God, Nora, that's amazing. Wow. So how do you celebrate that when the last one's done and the last check is cut? What does celebrating that look like? Because that better be big, because that is big.
Well, it's ironic that it's also happening at our 20th year.
I think that's...
But it's mind-blowing to me that it's so... I hope that it is so inspirational for other small businesses, because if you set your mind to it, like, you can make a huge difference, And if everybody did that, like, can you imagine what a different world this would be? Like, you know, it would just be. And people want to, as your retailers know, they want to purpose buy. They want to buy something that has a double purpose. Do good in the world.
Yes.
Right? Everybody wins. So my hope is that number will get out there for people to realize that, like, a very small company with 20 people that
has
revenue can make that much of a difference.
I think I've said it all the time. I just said it during Alex's interview, is that I think it's really important for not only businesses, but just humans in general to give back, whether it's time volunteering or it's donating clothes or food or outreach to the homeless. Or it would be a very different world if people did that as a regular thing and not just because it was Christmas or Thanksgiving or, you know, I've got to go do this out of the guilt or whatever. But I the companies that make it part of the company culture, I think, make better companies all the way. And I think also things come to them because they're giving back. It's, you know, what you put out is what you give back. And I think that
it's all about the energy. There's no doubt in my. That's why our company is still here 20 years later. It's 100% the energy that all of us have consciously decided that we're going to put out into the universe. You know, every team member that is, you know, part of their core is to be 10% kinder, to smile when you don't want to smile, to be 10% more honest. You know, let somebody know that you've been in that boat, even if it's embarrassing or it's, you know, something you don't want to wear on your sleeve, that person might make all the difference in the world for them to hear that you've been in that boat or you've felt that way before or you've been shitty day too or you're scared about something. You know, it's a very important thing for businesses too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think the compassion part of it as well. I think that, you know, I think a lot of people walk around with like, no, everything's fine. You know, our company's fine. You know, there's not a lot of vulnerability. And I think when you do show that vulnerability, then it lets other people in and understand that they're not the only ones going through whatever it may be. But I think a lot of people are not willing to be that person, that vulnerable. Like, they'd rather hold their cards close and that poker face of like, everything's fine. Now that the St. Jude is done, are you going to partner up with another brand or another?
No. So what we're doing is we're starting our own foundation. So Nora Fleming will be funding the Nora Fleming Foundation. And part of that will be this retreat center that I'm building right now to host people in community settings. Fun stuff from, you know, come paint a mini and learn how to set a fun tablescape to more intimate things. Like, I would love to host parents of medically fragile kids. Just a safe place to come, leave your armor at the door. You're with other people who are just as scared and just as anxious about certain things, and just to be able to open up doors to a safe place where people can come and be themselves. So that's our next project within like the philanthropic world of Nora Fleming.
Where is the center going to be?
It's in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. It's only like an hour outside of, you know, AmeriCorps. So it'll be very accessible to people. I don't know if you're familiar with Lake Geneva, but it's quite a cute little town. It has lots of hotels and restaurants, and it's a real destination spot. So I'm hoping that people are really going to enjoy the location. I bought a 5-acre farmette and remodeled it. It was an old chicken coop. Mm. And then I'm in the process of building a barn space to actually, you know, do art retreats and do grief retreats. I just signed up for a class last night to get my certification in grief counseling, grief coaching. So I'm just trying to really educate myself and just trying to learn how to hold space for people. And that's basically what our brand does.
I have to give it to you because I think a lot of people are afraid to go the grief route, especially after somebody that's gone through it, because I feel like I would guess that in people talking about their own grief, it brings up your own grief, and it's like this perpetual. And I think the people that do hold space for people that are going through something like that, or a child, you know, cancer or whatever somebody's going through, I think that it's a very strong and brave person to hold space like that, because it's got to bring up your own feelings and your own, what you've gone through.
So it does. I also think like I was saying about how I didn't really get signings before losing my brother. It is my way of healing. You know, there is a selfish part of this, you know, philanthropic event for me. It's that promise I made the day the police came and said there was an accident. It was, you will make this into something beautiful. You will not let this break you, your sister, you know, those kids, you know. And I feel like that's the work that I've been doing since losing him has really put me in a position where I feel confident that this is the right next step for me. So it's just, it's really turning something really crappy into something hopeful and beautiful. And especially with grief, I think our whole culture needs to shift the way we look at our time here on earth and everyone, you know, it's like this thing we don't talk about. And
yeah.
And it's just, it's kind of a shame because it's when none of us are getting out of here alive, and we're all going to experience loss. So how do we do that with a little more compassion and a little more honesty? So I'm excited about it. I feel like it's a privilege and an honor that I can bring to his legacy too.
I think that's an incredible gift for yourself and for everyone that is going to go. I know that when we spoke, I lost it on the stage because when you had said it was the first year you felt joy again during that holiday, and my stepdad had just passed away and I was going to see my mom, and yeah, we talked off camera, and it's like, I do worry about how long is it going to be before, because she's just at the, I mean, they just had would have been their anniversary on Valentine's Day, and it's like, it's so fresh and so raw, and I just, you know, you wonder how long is it going to be. That's when you said that and I lost it on stage, it was, I wonder how long it's going to be till she feels joy again. It's like hard to think about.
It is. And I guess that's my hope, is that I would have bet my life I was never going to feel joy again. I literally would have staked my life on it. And I did. So just to even know that it's a possibility for people out there, I feel like I need to share that story and share that honesty, right? And it's very aligned with our brand too. Like, everyone always thinks of people gathering during happy times, but that's not the only times people are bringing out these plates. You know, I mean, they're gathering to celebrate or to acknowledge someone just got diagnosed with something, and they're there for everything, not just the good times.
Mm.
And I think that's really important to remember when I think about the brand, that it isn't. The last thing I ever want to do is give the impression that it's like all
happy
rainbows and butterflies. Yeah, it's not, you know, life is hard, and we are gathering for many different reasons throughout our lives. So to honor each and every one of those gatherings that Nora Fleming products are a part of is really important to me.
Did you do a mini for your brother?
No, I did not, but he did a mini of himself for his 40th birthday. So he turned 40 in July and passed away in November. So he was freshly 40 when he passed away, but he had a party for himself. And the way he invited everybody was he had our manufacturer make little minis of himself in a Lululemon shirt with his Adidas and a hat on backwards.
Hilarious.
There's a John Neidlinger mini out there in the world. And he mailed them to all of his buddies and said, want to come to my birthday party?
That's actually brilliant. Oh my God. Tell me a little bit about, because I know I've had you for almost an hour, but I do want to hear about a little bit of the creative process about how you come up with these minis. Since you're putting them out almost quarterly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like such my jam too. It's my favorite. They really just start with sketches and just brainstorming ideas, or we'll a lot of time we'll just look at different Christmas ornaments, or we'll be walking around market and see any sort of little figurine that, oh, that could be really cute. Any and I keep fearing that I'm going to run out of ideas, and we never do. It's like there's still more fun stuff to celebrate and to commemorate and make minis of. It's fun right now. Our next collection has a lot of throwback things, like vintage stuff.
Cool.
So, yeah, so that's fun.
What was new this year that you introduced at this last round again? Because when this comes out, I think it's coming out in April or May. So the show we have just passed was the January show. What were the new introductions for January?
That was the lipstick mini, which sold amazingly well. We did a little window box, a flower box with lattice work on it that was precious. We did a sunshine that has kind of like a mid-century modern look to it. We did a chick with a little, or egg with a little chick popping out of it. Mm. Definitely the best selling ones are the holiday specific ones, but then it's always fun to just bring in some that are just kind of off the wall. And
so are you going to do pickleball? Cause I got to ask, cause that's like,
we just did one. That one came out last market.
Is it as big as everybody else?
Pickleball?
Yes. I didn't get it.
I don't know either, but I don't play it, but we better start.
I tried, but I don't have the hand-eye coordination, so I'm out on that one. But I'm like, I do not. I mean, it's like the one gift craze where I'm like, I do not understand this. And I'm setting up pickleball merchandising for people, and it's like, what the
fuck? Yes. Left, huh? You never know what the next trend's going to.
Tell me, one of my last questions is, well, I have two questions. How do you get inspiration?
I keep a notebook by my bed at night. A lot of my ideas come to me right before I fall asleep. So that was kind of like my flow state. I don't know if it's because I'm like relaxed, but 99% of the things that I've invented have come to me in that state right before bed. Yeah. And then a lot of it is just, I'm still like a total scavenger hunter. Like I love thrift shops. I love Goodwill. I love garage sales. I mean, that's like my favorite. I get so much inspiration out of layering old pieces with new pieces, looking back in history and being inspired by where something has been throughout its life, you know, whether it's a sugar bowl or whatever it may be. That inspires me a lot too.
I collected old salt and pepper shakers, like 30s and 40s. I love, like, I used to love scouring flea markets for those things. And they're some of the most amazing little, like, I don't know. I mean, I still love the salt and peppers now, but the ones, the old ones that had so much more detail, I felt like that were just like, and a lot of them were, I think, Japanese that were hand painted that came over. Like, but they, I mean, it's like, I love vintage, anything vintage.
I just saw a really cool product on Etsy that somebody had taken a bunch of old salt and pepper shakers and turned them into candelabras.
Oh, they were so cute.
You know, stack it together.
Uh-huh.
Wow. I love that.
You got to Google it. Google it.
All right, it's on Etsy.
I'm going to do it.
But yeah, beautiful. Beautiful. And the one of them was like all vintage horse salt and pepper shakers.
Oh.
Which would be like, yeah.
Oh my God. I've got to
do that. Dining room table.
Uh-huh.
They were awesome.
My
so yeah, that kind of stuff lights me up for sure.
How much time do you spend doing that? Like going, I go down a wormhole of like Pinterest and I realize, oh my God, I'm doing this for 2 hours. Like, get
yeah.
off.
Yeah. It was a huge activity when my kids were little. Like they vividly, I mean, every Friday morning we get up and go garage sale. It's all of their toys would come from there. I would actually leave them in the car with my mother. My mother and my two kids and I would go every Friday and Saturday mornings, a lot of Saturday mornings too, the garage sales. And I would, you know, park up in the front there and I would run into the garage sale and check things out, you know, do a recon mission. And I vividly remember my son, he couldn't have been 5 or 6, rolled down the window and he screams out the window, "Is it a good one or is it all crap?" Because there were so many times I'd get back in the car and be like, "No, next one, it's all crap," you know? So this little voice comes out of the back. Is it a good one or is it all crap?
Do they do that? Did they take, cause my mom, I mean, it's weird. My mom refinished antiques and I didn't realize until later, when my Fred Siegel days, when I'd go flea marketing with Pascal and Steve, who owned Fred Siegel Couture, and my boss, and we'd all go to the Santa Monica flea together in this big group. And it dawned on me all of a sudden, my God, this is 100% my mom's doing it. Like my love of old. Do your kids do garage sales? Yes. How old are they now?
Yeah, 20 and 22. And yes, they're both like very, very unique. Their sense of style is very unique. A lot of vintage in both of their clothing collections. My son is very much into jewelry, which is, you know, he's very masculine and hockey player, but he wears a pinky ring and he's super into his art too. So it's definitely been trickling down.
I love it. Okay. My last question is, what piece of advice would you give to a young entrepreneur or somebody that's thinking about opening up their own retail space?
I would definitely say, again, to be patient. Nothing worth having happens overnight, and nothing worth having is easy. And then for the young entrepreneur, I think it's really important that we get the message out there that you don't need to have $1 million. You don't need to even have a warehouse full of stuff. I mean, as long as you are honest with where you stand with your product production time, there's nothing stopping you from going to market. You can go to market with just your samples and say, hey, you know, you want to place an order for this? Amazing, but it's going to take me, you know, 6 months to get it to you. And as long as you're honest, people are willing to wait. So that would be, my advice to young entrepreneurs who actually want to bring a product to market would be, don't wait until you have X amount of dollars and think that's okay. Then it's okay to do it. So just bite the bullet. Just be honest about where you stand in your business plan.
Love that. Thank you so much. I really love the time I get to spend talking to you and getting to know you.
It's an honor
to have all my retailers get to know you. I think I think that everyone's going to gain a whole new respect and love for you and what you do. I mean, it's truly an honor to get to know you.
Thank you so much. I was honored to be on your show, and it's an honor to be in whatever retailers are listening that carry Nora Fleming. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts. We completely committed to the independent retailer and really honor our relationship and appreciate you very much. So that's just how I'd like to close that out for our retailers.
Thank you.
And that is a wrap. The Retailer Podcast is produced by myself, Michelle Sherrier, and Catherine Kalu. Our website, where you can find all of our episodes, can be found at www.theretailwhorepodcast.com. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at The Retail Horror Podcast.